The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, welcome to a Wednesday, everybody, and what a day. Oh my goodness, talk about a roller coaster. We go from one extreme to the other, it seems. And I woke up, as I tend to do in the middle of the night. I gotta go to the bathroom. So, of course, I check my phone because I'm a creature of the digital age, I suppose. And sure enough, there's an alert on my phone that the Supreme Court, by doing nothing, basically overturned Roe v. Wade last night. What happened is, in Texas, they passed this law, as they tend to do in Texas. This one, it's a heartbeat bill. Well, law now. Outlawing abortion at 6 weeks or the moment a fetal heartbeat is detected. Now, just so you know, for those who don't know, that's before most women even know they're pregnant. And that is what this law stated, that not only would it be illegal to obtain an abortion at that point, but anybody who turns in somebody who is trying to get an abortion could win a $10,000 bounty. Not only that, if you turn in someone who helps someone try to get an abortion, that person can also be prosecuted. I'm stunned. Here, let me read this to you because I'm not making this up. As I call it, the newly Trump-packed, right-wing-dominated Supreme Court struck overnight when it did nothing. They simply stood back and allowed the most restrictive abortion law in the country to go into effect in Texas at a minute after midnight last night, this morning, September 1st. It criminalizes abortion at 6 weeks or whenever a fetal heartbeat is heard. And it deputizes citizens to enforce the ban by offering, as I just said, a $10,000 bounty to anyone who successfully sues somebody aiding or abetting anyone seeking an abortion in Texas, even an Uber driver who might drive a woman to a doctor who might perform the procedure, the constitutionally legal procedure, I might add. Abortion providers in Texas had asked the justices and a federal appeals court to block the law. Court precedents have established the right to abortion until fetal viability, which comes at about 22 to 24 weeks. Texas abortion providers had argued that unless the courts prevented the law from taking effect, it would, quote, immediately and catastrophically reduce abortion access in Texas, eventually forcing many clinics to shut down. And that's I'm guessing many shut down as of midnight at 12:01 this morning. You can't get an abortion in Texas anymore. Now, the Supreme Court, you know, they have on their docket, the term begins a month from now, the first Monday in October, and they're hearing a challenge. I think it's a Mississippi law. And so it's there. They could have stayed this, but they did nothing. This is Donald Trump's stacked, packed Supreme Court. This is Alexis McGill. She's the CEO of Planned Parenthood. Here's what she said earlier today about it.
It's an incredibly dark day, not just for the 7 million women of Texas, but also to the 80% of Americans believe that there should be safe and legal abortion. And unfortunately, this law, in effect, has de facto taken that right away in Texas.
I don't recognize this country anymore. It's really frightening. Now, Diane Russell in the YouTube chat room says more like 26 weeks. I know that's when a fetus may become viable, but I'm talking about, you know, these laws, these restrictive laws going into effect around the country. Many have tried to, you know, put the ban at 20 weeks. I think they've been pushed back to 22 to 24. But regardless, this is insane. I don't know where we go from here, because this portends what's going to happen in the fall when the actual court does hear this challenge to Roe. We know how they're going to rule. We knew how they were going to rule before. I guess we all knew, except for Susan Collins, Senator of Maine, who trusted Brett Kavanaugh. He likes beer, you know. She trusted Brett Kavanaugh when he said that he respects the precedents set by the court. You know what I say to that?
Bullshit.
It is bullshit. It's just, I would like to know, and I'm not sure who I ask, but I would like to know who opens the case into Brett Kavanaugh. He lied under oath. You heard Lisa Graves, who was on with me last week. Lisa Graves is my legal expert around here. And Brett Kavanaugh lied in his confirmation hearings. He lied under oath. He lied on a number of different fronts. And he should be impeached. He should not be sitting on that Supreme Court. Actually, neither should Amy Coney Barrett, because they stole that seat. Neither should Neil Gorsuch, because they stole that seat. In fact, I hate to say it, of the three, Kavanaugh's was the only one legitimately nominated by the former guy. You know, Neil Gorsuch, that was the seat that was actually Obama's to fill. And I'm sorry, the seat that Amy Coney Barrett is occupying, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's seat, that is the seat that was, Joe Biden's to fill. Because that happened, what, a week before the election? And now, by doing nothing, boy, this is the definition of what's the word I'm looking for? Feckless? Ballless? It's infuriating. And I feel for my friends in Texas. I'm not one to speak. I live in Florida. This is where we are. Oh my God. So anyway, we got a busy, I couldn't not talk about that today, but that just happened last night. And I had a show planned for you today, as you may or may not know. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Joe Walsh. And no, I'm not talking about the Beatles, Joe Walsh. I'm talking about the former congressman. Okay, hold on one second. My husband's calling again. Yes, David?
Hi, sorry to interrupt your show again.
Yes.
But Brett Kavanaugh was not legitimately nominated. There was so much behind-the-scenes bullshit between Anthony Kennedy, was Trump's
right,
banker,
and how Anthony Kennedy suddenly retired. Yep,
and
you're right.
That guy getting on the court, yep. That it was ridiculous.
Yep. No, you're
and
right.
And yes, the Republicans stole the other two seats to a certain extent, but it was at least in part Obama's fault for having no testicles whatsoever that they were able to steal first seat.
Yep.
And the last one, the Democrats. Look, we saw what the people in Texas did to try and prevent this election law from going through. Did the Democrats in the U.S. Congress attempt to do anything else, even remotely similar,
that would have showed the slightest bit of spying in
response to this bullshit with Amy Coney Barrett? Hell no.
It's Amy Coney Barrett. You got to say it correctly. Amy Coney Barrett. Sorry.
Oh, you do it better than me. I despise Mitch McConnell with every fiber of my being. But nonetheless, you can't take away from him that he knows the strategy of how to run the Senate much better than the Democrats number one. And
That's
number
true.
Two, that Democrats don't have any fucking balls whatsoever. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt the show. But I couldn't.
Thank you. I'm trying to be gracious today. I'm opening up to a former teabagger. Republican.
You're turning over a new leaf. You're being gracious.
I'm trying.
It's so unlike you.
I know. Okay, I got to go. I have a guest standing by.
All right, love you.
Bye. My husband, everybody. And yes, every now and then he has a good point. And he did there. Because there are, I would like to have an investigation into what made Anthony Kennedy retire all of a sudden. And there's all kinds of questions. We'll get to that because we're not going to drop that topic. We'll get back to it. But so we've got Joe Walsh coming up because, you know what, last week I saw him tweeting and he was sufficiently, apologetic. My brain and my mouth are not connecting. But, you know, he seemed to be owning up to the errors of his ways. And I tweeted at him and I said, I'm surprised. You know, I knew you as an asshole, deadbeat guy. And here you are. And he said, I wasn't a deadbeat. That's been proven. And I went back and I researched it. And he's right. His ex-wife took back those allegations. But he did. But he said, I can see where you would have thought I was an asshole. So he owned up to it. I invited him on the show. He'll be here in about 20 minutes. So we'll see how that goes. I'm looking forward to it. But before we get there, I got to tell you, I wake up this morning, aside from the news from the Supreme Court, there's something else that dominated not only the Twitters, but the interwebs. I mean, it seemed like every one of the news sources that I go to had this story with a video of Senator Ron Johnson, one of the worst of who's currently in Congress and in the Senate, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, who needs to go, admitting on camera, I think it was a hidden camera, that Joe Biden won the election in Wisconsin. Let me share with you this video. And then in a moment, we're going to talk to Lauren Windsor, the woman who got this video. So here we go. Ron Johnson. Maybe a bit of honesty from Ron Johnson. What a concept.
You know that Joe Biden didn't win this election. I mean, in my heart of hearts, he didn't win.
In Wisconsin, do you know the vote totals?
I don't know.
So without knowing the vote totals, you can't even state that opinion.
I just really need all the small chatter.
So let me give you the vote totals.
I know that there was a late night dump in Milwaukee, a vote dump. I don't remember exactly.
Well, we've done a recount in Milwaukee. Prior to this election, I was the number one vote getter statewide, just under 1.5 million votes. Okay? This election, Trump got 1,610,000. No Republican had ever cracked 1.5 million. Numerous Democrats have gone over 1.6 or 1.5. So now, for the first time in history, we have a presidential candidate beating my vote total by 130,000 votes. Collectively, the state assembly candidates and Republican state assembly candidates got 1,661,000. The eight congressional candidates also got 1,661,000. So we obviously counted enough Republican votes. The only reason Trump lost Wisconsin is 51,000 Republican voters didn't vote for him. They voted for other Republican candidates.
But so you're telling me that Joe Biden won the state fair and square?
Because
I don't see it. I don't believe it.
Well, look at the totals. It's certainly plausible. There's nothing obviously skewed about the results. There isn't.
There's nothing skewed about the results in Wisconsin.
No, I'm not saying what's happening in Maricopa County. I don't know the same thing. Look at the number again. Collectively.
Wisconsin and Georgia and Arizona.
Listen, you're not listening.
I am listening.
Collectively, Republicans got 1.661 million votes. 51,000 more votes than Trump got. Trump lost by 20,000. If Trump got all the Republicans voted for Trump the way they voted for the assembly candidates, he
He didn't get 51,000 votes, that's why other Republicans got, and that's why he lost. Okay. Well, I welcome to the show the woman of the hour, Lauren Windsor. Good work. So when did this Hi, it's so nice to see you. Thank you for coming on the show. So when did you shoot this video?
On Sunday.
Just on Sunday?
In Wauwatosa.
Wow. But you're on a beach in Hawaii now.
Yeah.
I know. I kid.
A little vacation after that hit.
I bet. So Ron Johnson just said, now he thought you were one of his followers. Is that why he spoke openly to you? Because he doesn't say those things in public.
Yeah, I appeared to be a Trump supporter, so I'm sure that went a long way in allowing him to be more open about his true feelings.
That's amazing. Now, Lauren Windsor is executive producer of The Undercurrent. You can find them at theundercurrent.tv. She's also executive director of American Family Voices, a partner at Democracy Partners with friend of the show, Mike Lux. And you can find American...
Mike says hi.
Mike says hi. Hi, Mike. And so this is great. You've been doing this for quite a while, like since... Like Occupy Wall Street, you've been doing videos like this posting them online and helping to expose people like Ron Johnson. And so that's a good thing. What made you start going around with a video camera?
Well, I've been producing The Undercurrent since, I would say, 2012. It was right after Occupy. I started going around the country filming protests and launched a web show with the Young Turks on the 1 year anniversary of Occupy. In recent years, since, the pandemic, I took a break for about a year to go work on a presidential campaign. And that time period of coming back, like from the campaign and the pandemic and just getting back to DC from California, I don't know, there was much more focus on trying to preserve our democracy. And I really felt like going undercover was the only way to expose the ongoing threats to democracy. So while I have done a certain amount of undercover work throughout that, the past 9 years or so with the show, it's really been more of a focus this year because of the threats to democracy.
Right. Yeah. So as I said, this morning I woke up and all the usual places, from Crooks and Liars to Raw Story to, MediaEye to, everywhere, even on CNN, there's hits. Ron Johnson admits that Biden won in Wisconsin. Did you expect this kind of coverage?
I thought it would be a pretty big news story, given that he's tried to have it both ways.
Yes.
It's gotten a lot of traction, though. We had three stories in the Washington Post over the past 24 hours, which is, a personal record. But and we're on the AP Newswire, and
that's called blowing up.
Yeah, it definitely blew up outside of the interwebs as well. So it was on MSNBC. So
cool. Well, yeah, it's like going viral. It is. You created this video, and have you heard anything from Ron Johnson's office? I'm guessing not.
Generally speaking, not me directly, but I do keep tabs on when politicians issue statements, and we retweeted the statement that he made to Spectrum News, the local news station in Wisconsin.
What did he say?
But he said that it's it was nothing that he hadn't already said publicly.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true. If it were, this wouldn't have blown up the way it did, would it?
I concur.
Right. So this is awesome. I'm so glad you did this. We need to get Ron Johnson the hell out of there. It still kills me that he replaced Russ Feingold in the Senate. Talk about two extremes. Russ Feingold was as good as they come, and Ron Johnson is as bad as they come. And he just shows what a liar he is. Everything about him, there's nothing real. But you're delving into this world where nothing is real. So I'm exploring the website at theundercurrent.tv, and I notice all the way along across the top, it says Project Veritas Exposed. Now, Project Veritas is that evil creature oh God, I'm looking at his picture now, and I'm drawing a blank on his name. The twerp, the fake the fake video twerp. What's his name?
James O'Keefe.
James O'Keefe, of course. You know, I ran into James O'Keefe. It's got to be 10 years ago now at Netroots Nation. It was in Minneapolis, and they were following us. And he was holding court in the lobby of the hotel where I was staying. And he makes my skin crawl. But he keeps doing this shit, calling his thing Project Veritas. Veritas refers to truth. It's anything but, because we're living in opposite world right now. But you're exposing what they do. Tell me about your involvement working to expose James O'Keefe.
Well, so back in 2016, he infiltrated my firm's office, Democracy Partners. And so in the wake of that infiltration, I moved to preserve evidence and document what happened to us.
You know what? I had forgotten about that, but now I do. I remember. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Bob Creamer is a partner in our firm, mm-hmm. one of the co-founders, and he's, you know, a dear, dear mentor, you know, practically, you know, like a father figure to me.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, I felt very strongly about needing to document what happened to us, even if we did not engage in litigation, at least to provide some kind of like a template, you know, like roadmap for other organizations to say like all of these individuals are involved. And so, you know, I started pulling on threads from an investigative reporter mindset and pulling on threads. I started to piece more and more of their scheme together and, you know, the entity that they had created in order to, you know, launch this whole infiltration in the first place led me, you know, down rabbit holes. And so I had this like initial dossier that I was putting out just for the progressive movement as a resource to say, if you come across, you know, these individuals, they're Project Veritas. And I think maybe at the time it was 10 or 15 people that had been identified. And then the more I thought about it, the more I was just like, why stop here? You know, why not just, you know, see what I can dig up on anyone that's been affiliated with the organization over the years. And when I did that, it just kind of snowballed into this, you know, passion project, really, because it's meant to be a resource for the progressive movement, whether or not that's individual activists or organizations, but also campaigns, because, you know, since 2014, they've really focused in on having an electoral impact. So, you know, they, which to me as a money and politics activist, is a bridge too far. Like to infiltrate a campaign is really a political espionage.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that it's not, there's everyone in DC, like, you know, likes to push the lines as far as they go, but you know, that to me is you step over the line.
It's going over the line, right? That I mean, that is really dirty. And DC is dirty. Politics is a dirty game. It wasn't always that way, but I think it always has been that way.
Well, you know, he is really like a protege of Roger Stone and, yeah. and Lee Atwater.
Oh, they
and
take
that
it
sort
to
of lineage of. Yeah. You know, folks on the right, Breitbart was his, you know, real,
yeah, yes.
The truest mentor. But so anyway, it grew into a larger project, and we are actually engaged in litigation against Project Veritas. Our lawsuit goes to trial this winter in December.
Oh, good. Over what he did to Democracy Partners?
Yes. So, our firm, you know, is engaged in $1 million lawsuit against Project Veritas. And so there's a lawsuit. And, you know, when I said resource for the progressive movement, this is also like a resource for media and for attorneys. So, you know, I get contacted all the time from attorneys, from, you know, organizations saying we think that we may have been infiltrated. And I've assisted a number of organizations with identifying moles and successfully, you know, been able to fight back.
Good. So. You know, you do have, you mentioned the dossier. You've got a photo array of his operatives, these people who go undercover, they pretend to be who they're not. I mean, the first time we met James O'Keefe was when he posed as a pimp going into an Acorn office trying to get, you know, one of the workers there who helped people register to vote or you know, in the community. That's what Acorn was about, was helping the community. And they tried to set them up. This is their MO. They set people up. And, you know, he was dressed as a pimp. It was just over the top, ridiculous. And I'm sorry.
I should say at that point, when you talk about like people, you know, dressing up in costumes, you know, I, you know, dressed up as a Trump supporter.
Right. That's okay. But he was a caricature of a pimp. I'm sorry. I don't know any pimp. Not that I know pimps. I don't hang out with them. But the whole, you know, the boa with the hat and the whole thing, it was just a caricature. Right.
It was definitely a caricature. And the thing that I think you said it was a boa, it was actually like his grandmother's like chinchilla. It was like a mink or something. His grandmother had a mink coat that he was using for the occasion. It's a big part of the lore with Project Veritas. But just to, you know, make this sort of clear for your listeners is I do not, in what I do, people will often compare me to James O'Keefe, say that I'm the James O'Keefe of the left or whatever. And I would like to dispel that characterization because, you know, for me, I try to be as above board as possible with, like, you know, not targeting, you know, civilians for bird dogging, for, you know, accountability. This is about exposing hypocrisy and holding politicians accountable. And sometimes you do have to do that in an undercover way in order to get at the truth of something. But, you know, I use a variety of methods. I mean, I definitely like am a straight reporter. I go to press conferences, I go to rallies, and, you know, my videographer colleague, Pete Callahan, you know, we definitely like play a traditional press role. But, you know, it's when it's talking about something that's like a threat to our democracy, to just the integrity of our system, to me, it calls for, you know, more enhanced measures in order to be able to expose.
Well, you're doing what you need to do to get to the story. So if you need to pose as a Trump supporter to get Johnson to open up to you, that's one thing. You don't deceptively edit what he said. What he said is what came out of his mouth. You're not changing it. You're not trying to get him to say something that he's not going to say. You want to hear what he's going to say. James O'Keefe deceptively edits everything. You can't trust the video that he releases because it's not raw video and it's not uncorrupted, let's say. So I don't put you on the same level as him in any way, shape, or form. He's good. A creep. You're doing good work. So anyway, that's just.
And I should note that with Ron Johnson, we did release the final clip today and the full captioned, otherwise raw footage.
Oh,
so
cool.
Like, yes, it's captioned, but it's, there's no cuts. It's just,
it's the raw video. Awesome.
9 minutes of conversation.
And people can see that at theundercurrent.tv.
I don't think it's loaded on the website yet,
okay.
But it's definitely on Twitter.
Gotcha.
Within my posts and, you know, we can't post 9 minute videos as part of the issue. You have to have like a special account.
okay.
Well, media certified accounts or whatever. But the Democratic Coalition has the full uncut version.
Gotcha.
At the almost 9 minute mark. I think it's like 8:55.
Okay. Well, Lauren Windsor, congratulations. I'm glad you're finally getting the recognition you deserve because you've been doing this work for a long time and you're great at it. Somebody in a list we're on together, I think called you a rock star, and you are. By the way, Brad Friedman sends his love because I'm going to run this on his show tonight as well. Thank you. I see Joe Walsh is standing by. You have any questions for me to ask Joe Walsh? Not the guitar player. The former congressman.
No, I you know, thank him for, you know, coming over from the dark side. You know, for so long, I just remember being like, you know, this Tea Party sort of Looney Tunes. And then, you know, he totally he just turned and for the better. And thank you for doing
it. That's what we're going to find out about next. Lauren Windsor, it was great finally meeting you. We'll have to do this again when I have more time. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Nicole.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right, so there's Lauren. She's going to leave. And guess what? I'm going to bring in Joe Walsh. Give me 1 second to set up the shot. Oh, and there he is. Hi, Joe. It's awkward because I do this program by myself. I'm like a one-woman show, and I'm the host, the producer, the engineer. So I'm getting our shot set up here, and I'm just going to bring you in. Joe Walsh, former congressman from the great state of Illinois, who went on to be a radio host. Now you're in my world. I've been in radio for 40 years, and now you do a podcast. And I love the name of your podcast. It's called Fuck Silence, the Fuck Silence Podcast. You get it at with Joe Walsh. fsilencepodcast.com is where people can find it. We are online, so I can say the word.
Yes.
Welcome to the show. It's nice to meet you.
Hey, Nicole, I mean this. It's really good to be with you.
Well, thank you. And you know what? I mean it too. And I never in a million years thought that we would be talking. Because back when you were in Congress, you came in the Tea Party wave of 2010. You served one term and you were out in 2012. Now, at least for your first year, I was on the air. I think, on Air America Radio. Although we went off the air in January of 2010, I think the network went dark and I went online. But that's when I went from Air America to here. And that's when you were in Congress and making a lot of noise. And you were you made a lot of noise for a freshman congressman. You got a lot of attention. Did you set out to do that? Were you obnoxious and loud and my word, asshole-ish just to get the attention?
No, but I did, Nicole, because I wasn't a young whippersnapper. I was in my mid to late 40s when I went. You know, a lot of members, when they go there, their eyes get big and they see the lobbyist. I didn't want to screw around with any of that. I went there because I had some things to do. And part of that was getting attention to the issues I cared about. But no doubt about it, I could see where some people thought I was an asshole.
But you were, I don't want to spend our time together, rehashing the things you said, but I feel like I have to at least call you on some of them and ask about them and then ask about what prompted this sea change. But let me bring up a few tweets because you were quite prolific on the Twitter machine. Here's one. You tweeted on November 8th, I'm voting for Trump. On November 9th, if Trump loses, I'm grabbing my musket. You in? Okay. Then here's one from, this was September of 2016. Once again, an uninformed mob of cop haters protests in an American city. Last night, Charlotte, they threw rocks and bottles at police officers, injuring at least 12 cops. The race war Obama and the left wants is here. The war against our cops continues. Stand with our police. This will get ugly. Again, it's what the left wants.
Stop with those two, because, Nicole, those are two great ones.
Okay.
The first one, the musket tweet, that's my favorite tweet, because, again, obviously I'm talking about a musket. So I'm not encouraging people to charge Washington, D.C. with their muskets. They wouldn't get a lot done.
Okay.
But I also, there was another famous musket tweet on the day of the election in 16. And I said, no matter who wins, I'm going to grab my musket and fight for freedom and limited government. So musket for me was just fighting for the things I believed in. That other tweet, that was the night that five cops were killed in Dallas by a Black Lives Matter supporter. And no doubt about it, Nicole, I was pissed off. And I wish I could take that tweet back because my language was much too incendiary. No doubt about it.
Well, the incendiariness is what I'm going after here. The other issue that you really went overboard on, here's one. For the past week, everyone has been asking again why Obama hates Israel. The answer is simple, really. I think Obama is Muslim.
And Nicole, that's a great one. And of, again, of the 60,000 things I've tweeted the last 10 years, calling Barack Obama a Muslim is my greatest regret. And I've apologized publicly hundreds of times for it. And that's a perfect example of, Nicole, kind of the old Joe Walsh. Very pro-Israel. I didn't think Obama was nearly pro-Israel enough. So I lashed out at him and engaged in ugly personal politics. I'm still very pro-Israel. I don't do that anymore.
Okay. Have you apologized to Barack Obama?
Not directly, but publicly a bunch of times. I hope one day, Nicole, I really do. I hope to have the opportunity to sit down with him because I'd love to look him in the face and apologize.
I think he'd probably appreciate that. Then again, I need to say this. Would it be such a horrible thing if Obama was a Muslim?
No. And that's a great question, Nicole. And actually, some of the criticism I got, people said that. And my response was, no, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But the point was, by saying that, I called the former president a liar.
Yeah.
Because he's identified as a Christian. It had nothing to do with Islam. But I guess, Nicole, what's interesting is if you want to see any change in me, and generally I still believe the same things I believe issues-wise, but back then in the early days, I was more provocative. I was trying to push the envelope. And, Nicole, there were times when I went over my skis. I got so wrapped up that I engaged in ugly personal politics. I apologize for all of that. And I really try, except when I'm going after Trump, I try not to do that anymore.
You know, you say except when I'm going after Trump. Now, you supported Donald Trump in 2016. You were a big, the musket tweet is a prime example.
But again, I just need to make this one correction because this is important. The musket tweet to me was just good fun. I was not an enthusiastic supporter. In fact, he blocked me on Twitter during that campaign.
He blocked everyone.
Yeah, I know that. But I was very public at the time. Mm-hmm. I was on all over the country and I criticized him. But you're right. I did vote for him. And the sin I made, Nicole, was I didn't pay enough attention to what a bad guy he was. I really didn't. I wasn't going to vote for Hillary. I figured Trump is just a goof. Maybe he'll appoint a couple good people. Maybe a couple good things might happen. That was my mistake.
So you know, I followed along and I'm looking through your tweets today, and there's only just so much a person can take. And so I didn't get to the point where the light bulb went on. But as recently as 2018, you were making some pretty provocative kind of shitty statements. When did the big revelation come? When did you all of a sudden go, what the fuck am I doing?
Well, two things. There were two revelations, Nicole. One was shortly after Trump got elected, I started to pay attention to him. And again, I'm on the radio all over the country. I'm on Fox News all the time. I started to pay attention to him, and I realized pretty quickly he's a fucking horrible person. And then I realized pretty quickly, he's a threat to this country.
Yeah.
My final straw was Helsinki in the summer of 2018.
Remember that?
When he went in front of the world and said, I believe Putin, not my own people.
Right.
Nicole, when Trump did that, I went on the radio that night and I said, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure he's not reelected. That's when I began to lose all of my radio show.
Oh, wow. Was it because you went against Trump and the listeners turned on you?
No, well, it's because I went against Trump and the company who syndicated me turned against me. Advertisers turned against me, and some listeners did.
Who syndicated you? Was it Salem?
Salem Communications, man.
Do you know Nicole. Tom Tratup? Tom Tratup and I worked together. Tom Tratup and I worked together at WMCA in New York from 1981 to 85 or something like that. He used to be okay. I don't know how he runs Salem now.
Salem was in the tank for Trump, and they would pressure all of their syndicated hosts to be pro-Trump. Everybody did, except for me and Michael Medved. So they got rid of Michael Medved pretty quickly. And eventually they got rid of me.
Oh, so you weren't canned for using the N-word and other slurs? Because that's sort of what's out there.
No. Again, I don't specifically know what you're referring to. No, we were under pressure all the time to be loyal disciples of Trump.
Wow.
And I wouldn't do that at all.
Okay.
So well, eventually it just became untenable.
I hear you. I understand. Yeah, that's why I work for myself, because I won't, you know, nobody tells me what to say or think. And I know that's a thing in the right wing media world. There are talking points that are sent out every day. That's why you can flip on Fox. You can flip on any right wing radio talk show. You can flip on OAN or Newsmax, and you're going to hear the same exact words come out from a lot of different mouths because they read off the talking points they're given. Right?
And Nicole, I'm not going to complain because, look, it is the market at work. These are private companies. Mm-hmm. They want Trump supporters to be their radio host. I get it. I'm still conservative. You and I probably disagree on
most issues.
Well,
I want to get into that. And that's, yeah, I'm glad.
Yeah, but there's no room, none, in conservative talk radio for an anti-Trump conservative. Hey, Nicole, it's the same thing in the Republican Party. I was a Republican my whole life until 2 years ago. There's no room for someone like me.
That's, you know, that's sad. So for the longest time, I have wanted to get a Republican on the show, somebody that I could actually have an honest, open debate about the issues with. The problem is I couldn't find anybody because I believe you have to stipulate to the facts before you can have a debate. Facts, sky blue, grass green. You know, and what we're hearing today, what comes out of most Republicans is this alternate universe. I have a thing that I play. I came up with this theory actually when George Bush was in office, and that we're living in something called opposite world. And it's only gotten deeper and deeper down that rabbit hole since.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
So, because I can't get someone to stipulate to the facts, there's no starting point. But we can. So let me ask you: you're not still a Republican because the party left you. You're an independent now.
I'm an independent. I'm not a Republican because the Republican Party became an authoritarian, embracing, truth-denying cult.
Right.
Nicole, it really is a cult. The base of the party, and I've acknowledged this, is radicalized. And people like me helped radicalize them,
mm-hmm.
Trump especially.
Right. So you will come out and state unequivocally that Joe Biden won the election. It wasn't voter fraud. The election wasn't stolen. It wasn't rigged. You don't buy into the big lie.
Oh, Nicole, I fought against the big lie day after. I mean, and think about it, and I know you know this, Donald Trump started pushing the big lie before the election.
Well, in 2016, he had it ready to go.
And I went on the radio. That's when I was still on the radio. And I went ballistic at what Trump was doing. He was attacking the very heart of our democracy.
That's right.
But my listeners didn't want to hear it.
You know, they just have blinders on. Do you believe that COVID is real?
Hey, Nicole, I love you. You don't even need to go down this road. Yeah, I'm not, COVID's real. The vaccines work. This is stuff, all of this stuff. January 6th was a horrible insurrection.
It was an insurrection. Oh my, this is the new big lie. It was just it was a few dozen bad apples and everyone else got caught up in it and they didn't even know what was going on. They just waltzed into the stuff that I'm getting from people. I tweeted out last week, Trevor Noah did a full page ad in the New York Times and LA Times for the insurrection protection, the law firm of Trevor Noah and Associates and Sons. And it was hysterical. And I tweeted it out, and I must have been first because this tweet went viral. I got 25,000 likes on it. But I've been attacked by these crazy right-wingers who's like, you call that an insurrection? The insurrection is you idiots trying to force vaccines and masks on us. It's like, that's opposite world.
So Nicole, what makes me unusual is I still engage with thousands of these people every day. And what I try to do, and I've been doing this now for 3 years, is just put facts and basic truth in front of them. Mm-hmm. I still believe, Nicole, some of them, I think they're radicalized, they're in a cult, but not a week goes by, Nicole, where I don't hear from a former supporter of mine, an anti-vaxxer who decided to get vaccinated. So a few of them can be saved.
I hope
so. But you got to put truth, tough love. You got to put truth in front of them.
Yes, you do. So let's talk about some other issues, because we know, all right, so you're not a truther. You're not a birther anymore. You're not.
I gotta correct you.
Okay.
Because, and this isn't your fault, but because I've always been a very public person, mm-hmm. and very outspoken, people paint with a broad brush. I was never a birther.
But
ever.
I can cite dozens of tweets where you're calling out, you know, Obama as a Muslim.
No, stop. Two things though, Nicole, this is an important distinction. Mm-hmm. You're right. I've apologized for calling Barack Obama a Muslim, but that's a separate issue than saying he's not an American citizen, okay. and he was born in Africa.
Okay.
That's a birther. I never went down that road at all.
Good to know.
No, God no.
And you're happy we're out of Afghanistan. In fact, you've always been saying we need to get out of Afghanistan. How do you characterize Joe Biden finally ending this fucking endless war?
I give him all the credit and props in the world.
Good
it's weird, Nicole. I've been out there, and you have too, but I've been out there defending him.
Me too.
Because it angers me, the media and people criticizing this withdrawal.
Right?
We should have gotten out of there 20 years ago. It was a shitstorm of a war, and so the exit was always going to be a shitstorm.
That's right. There was no easy way out. It's war. War is ugly. People die. Just to think that we got so many people out before that one suicide bomber got through, 100,000 people evacuated without a casualty, that was a huge accomplishment. One guy got through, and they knew it was coming, and they warned everyone, and they said, get out of there. Get out of the airport. An attack is imminent.
Hey, Nicole, 10 years ago, Barack Obama is president. I'm in Congress. 10 years ago, I was yelling and demanding mm-hmm. that we get out of Afghanistan.
Good for you. All right. So then let me ask about something that maybe we disagree on. Healthcare. Our healthcare system sucks. We used to have the best healthcare in the world, and maybe we still do. But we don't have the best healthcare system in the world. We have this horrible for-profit insurance industry that determines what care you can or can't get. You think that's a good system, a good way to give healthcare to a country?
No, and it's the biggest problem domestically in America.
Yeah,
because as you know, you and I are hopefully, knock on wood, are going to live until our 90s. Mm. So the American people are living longer and longer. How we pay for all that health care, this country has to wrap their arms around, because right now the country's broke and we're getting broker by the day. So yes, we have the best quality of health care in the world. We have a lousy system and we have lousy access. Now, where you and I would debate and argue is, to me, the answer isn't more government involvement. To me, we got to get to a place where those people who can't care for themselves are always provided with government assistance. But the rest of us, I think, need to engage in more market solutions
really?
When it comes to healthcare.
So it should be
Nicole,
a for-profit enterprise. Healthcare should be a profit motive. Should have a profit motive attached to it?
Well, I believe that most of us should be able to choose and should be, Nicole, more responsible for our day-to-day healthcare costs. I think one of the biggest problems is you and I don't pay for it. Somebody else is always paying for our healthcare costs, whether it's an insurer, our employer, or the government. So the cost keeps going up and you and I never feel it. I think that would change for most of us. Remember, I'm not talking about needy people and people with health conditions, but the rest of us, I think, we've never ever felt any healthcare costs because we don't pay for our day-to-day costs. I think that needs to change.
Okay, well, but the big problem is the costs are rising because of the profit attached to it, because these insurance companies are pulling out so much money in profits to pay off shareholders instead of the money going to the cost of the care. I was diagnosed 5 years ago. I had lung cancer. I had recently been unemployed. I'm self-employed, right? I work for myself. So thank God we had the Affordable Care Act and I was able to buy in on the exchange and have insurance. It's the only reason I'm alive today. And yesterday, 2 days ago, was my five-year anniversary. I'm cancer-free. I'm cured. I'm considered cured. But if not for the Affordable Care Act, which came in while you were in Congress and you probably voted against. If not for that, I wouldn't be here right now.
But God bless you and good for you. And I mean that, Nicole, and I'm very, very happy for you. I mean that. But the rate of our public sector, government-run healthcare programs are rising faster than anything in the private sector right now.
That's because the for-profit industry priced everyone out of the market. We can't afford it.
So right now, the biggest, fastest-growing piece of any state budget is Medicaid.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? What are we going to do about
that? Because people can't afford the instruments that are offered to them on the open, on the capitalist market.
But I guess, Nicole, where this discussion gets really interesting is what can the country afford?
We can afford right now, anything. Right now, richest. We are the wealthiest nation on the planet. So let me throw this out. Shouldn't the wealthy pay their fair share in taxes? I'm really sick of the fact that I'm self-employed and I earn a tiny fraction of what I used to make. And let me tell you, I used to make a decent living. I don't anymore. I scrape and my show is run off of donations. I don't put my show behind a paywall because I don't think people should have to pay for the radio because I'm old school. I come from radio. I've been in radio for 40 years. I scrimp and I save and I try to scrape by. I pay more in taxes than Donald Trump.
Well, forget about Trump. But
I'm using it as an example.
Again, to your point, though, we can bat statistics back and forth. The top 1% pay 49% of all income taxes in this country.
And how much income do they take? How much of the wealth do they control?
Well, the really wealthy don't live off of income.
No, they live off the interest.
Exactly. So,
and they should pay taxes on that.
So here's maybe an area where you and I, good progressive you, libertarian me, can agree. Right now, our tax system sucks. It's so fucking confusing and convoluted. The wealthy people can hire accountants and lawyers to find every loophole under the sun.
That's right.
The average person gets spanked. Yep. So how about just a simple, flat, easy to understand.
No, because
get
that.
Get rid of all loopholes. Yeah. How about get rid of all loopholes?
Get rid of all loopholes, absolutely. But a flat tax will hurt the person like me who's living on a fixed income who has no money to spare. If you
Would
make,
you like to simplify the tax system?
Without a doubt. And by the way, when Trump and the Republican Congress pushed through their big $2 trillion tax cut for the billionaires, we were told you're going to be able to do your taxes on a postcard. Really?
And Nicole, if I had been in Congress, I would have voted against that tax bill because that was a boondoggle to the wealthy. Middle class folks should have had their taxes cut back then. I guess what I'm saying is there's room maybe for you and I to sit at a table and agree that let's try to figure out how we can simplify the code. And what every study in the world shows that when you simplify the tax code, the wealthy pay more.
Without a doubt. But, you know, we were told it was simplified, but it wasn't. It was even overly complicated, except the few little things that I could count on, you know, charitable contributions I could deduct. Can't anymore. Things, you know, things that could help the little guy went away while the big breaks for the billionaires were expanded. This is why, you know, finally, I'm thrilled that it looks like there's a deal going through that's going to help us. It's going to help with childcare. It's going to help with school expenses. It's going to help the guy, the person like me, who's frankly gotten a raw deal in favor of the wealthiest among us for at least the last 20 years, maybe give us a little bit of a break. But I'm guessing you're against the two infrastructure bills that are coming up.
No, I would fully support the smaller, the basic road, bridge, okay, rail, mm-hmm, all that, the 1.2 or 3 trillion.
Right.
I was yelling about infrastructure 10 years ago.
Which we need.
Absolutely. The bigger bill, no. Here's the problem, Nicole. Forget about the pandemic. are we ever going to have a grown-up conversation in this country about debt? About the government that we can't afford. Right now, we can't afford it. The Medicare and Social Security, mm-hmm, the latest numbers just came out yesterday. Again, gone, going to be gone. Medicare right
That's
now,
right,
7 years. Social Security, like 13 years. Are we ever going to talk about that? Or are we just going to keep spending money and some generation will pay all this back?
No, that's a myth. Are you familiar with modern monetary theory? Have you ever heard of Stephanie Kelton? I have a book for you to read. It's called The Deficit Myth by Stephanie Kelton. It's easy enough that I understand it. And I hear economics and my eyes roll back in my head. Stephanie Kelton is brilliant. She's a professor of economics, but she is an expert on modern monetary theory. And I would love for you to read The Deficit Myth, and then we talk again to hear what you have to say, because these are fake numbers.
And I'd love, Nicole, I do want you to send that book to me. And deficits are common, and I don't have a problem with government periodically, even more than periodically, running deficits. But we're at a point right now where our debt versus GDP is beyond what it was in World War II. We are in very scary territory right now. That's a problem.
It may be, but we're not going to fix the problem by starving the nation. Austerity measures don't help anyone. The way to inject money into the economy is put people to work. And if we redo the economy, get off of fossil fuels, put people to work on green energy, on rebuilding roads and bridges and getting our infrastructure into the 21st century, that's all that will come back to us tenfold, because people who have not been able to make, you know, get ahead in the world, they can have a better life. They can earn a decent living and have good jobs. We just need a push.
Yeah. And Nicole, it's striking a balance. And again, you and I come from different perspectives, mm-hmm, but I hear what you're saying. I also know that a lot of the wealthier people in this country are the job creators and the business owners.
Yeah. Who want to pay people $7.25 an hour. Can you live on $7.25 an hour?
Hey. God bless Jeff Bezos. I don't know the first thing about it, but God bless Amazon. God bless what Amazon has done for the American consumer.
Wow.
And God bless all the jobs that Amazon has created. That's all a good thing, right?
Yeah, and at least he gave them $15 an hour, but he had to be dragged into a kicking and screaming. What about the guy who's like, I'm going to pay minimum wage. I live in Florida. I think it's $8.25 an hour. I think it just went up to $10 an hour September 1st. Can you live on $10 an hour?
Well, what can you live on $15 an hour?
No.
I mean,
but I do, because that's probably about what I make.
the minimum wage was never designed to be a livable wage. We conflate these terms all the time.
I understand, but that's what these job creators think that they should pay people because that's what the government mandates.
Do you, Nicole, do you believe that everybody in America has a right to a livable wage, whatever that
might be? I do. I actually do. Yeah. I do.
I don't. I don't. But I don't, Nicole. But I do believe the government, the American people through their government can decide that that's a benefit everybody should have. I just don't believe that's a right.
Okay. Well, that's something we can agree to disagree on. And see, this is what I love about this conversation, is that we're disagreeing about certain things. We're not calling each other fucking assholes. We're not hanging up. I'm not telling you to go, you know, jump off a bridge. We can agree to disagree. And I can still tell you you're wrong.
And you know what's awesome, Nicole? This is part of what's so awesome about having Trump gone.
Yeah.
Because when Trump was president, I don't know about you, but man, it was like 95% of every conversation. We didn't talk issues.
Right. No, I agree. And we need to get back to issues because we're facing some really, really serious ones. So
but Joe Walsh going to run again, Nicole.
Oh, God. All right. Well, we'll reconnect and talk about that another time. Thank you so much for coming on today. I really enjoyed meeting you. I appreciate your honesty and I appreciate your willingness to say I was wrong, because a lot of people won't say those words. I say it all the time, but I'm glad to hear you say it too.
Hey, Nicole, I have fucked up plenty and it's been awesome to be with you. I mean it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You take care and we'll talk Nicole. Again soon. All right. Take
Thanks.
Care. Bye-bye. All right. Joe Walsh, that was interesting and I'm glad we did it. Yeah. So there you go. I have not looked over at the chat room because, I've been engaged in a conversation, so I'll read the chat later on. I've got to run because I'm guest hosting the broadcast again tonight. So I've got to produce that show and get it uploaded because there's a deadline there. So thank you. Thank you for listening. I'm curious to see the comments from the chatters. Let's see, tomorrow's Thursday, Howie Klein will be here. And then on Friday, John Nichols will be here to finish off the week. All right. Well, that was interesting. Yes, Joe Walsh being honest for the first time ever. Well, I guess Helsinki is what did it. And I'll tell you, that should have done it. It should have done it for every Republican, right? All right, guys, I'll leave you with the news. And I'll see you tonight over at the broadcast or back here tomorrow. As always, I can't thank you enough for hanging with me each day, and I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The newly packed by Trump, right-wing dominated Supreme Court struck overnight when it did nothing. It simply stood back and allowed the most restrictive abortion law in the country to go into effect in Texas at midnight on September 1st. The new law criminalizes abortion at 6 weeks or whenever a fetal heartbeat is heard. That's before most women even realize they are pregnant. But wait, there's more. This law even deputizes citizens to enforce the ban by offering a $10,000 bounty to anyone who successfully sues someone aiding or abetting anyone seeking an abortion in Texas, even down to an Uber driver. They even have a website to, quote, help enforce the Texas Heartbeat Act, where you can turn someone in who's trying to get an abortion. The website is prolifewhistleblower.com. I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried. Abortion providers in Texas had asked the justices and a federal appeals court to block the law. Court precedents have established the right to abortion until fetal viability at around 22 to 24 weeks. Texas abortion providers had argued that unless the courts prevented the law from taking effect, it would, quote, immediately and catastrophically reduce abortion access in Texas, eventually forcing many clinics to shut down. And that's not the only bad news out of Texas today. The Republican-controlled state legislature on Tuesday did what they've been trying to do. They passed some of the most restrictive voter suppression laws in the nation. This was delayed for about 6 weeks by a Democratic walkout. Remember, the House Democrats left the state to deny the Republicans a quorum so they couldn't pass this thing. The state overhaul of election rules were part of a push by Republican-dominated legislatures around the country in response to false claims that the ballot fraud cost the former guy the 2020 election. Texas Governor Greg Abbott quickly signed the bill into law. This legislation could have a particularly strong impact in heavily Democratic Harris County. That's the nation's third most populous county. It includes Houston. The law bans drive-through polling places. It bans 24-hour voting and other practices used last year to help people vote during the pandemic. It also forbids election officials from sending out unsolicited absentee ballot applications. Amazing. So, as you know by now, President Joe Biden defended his decision to pull U.S. troops out of Afghanistan by August 31st in a speech delivered from the White House on Tuesday, saying that doing so saved lives and ended America's longest war. Quote, "Leaving on August 31st is not due to an arbitrary deadline. It was designed to save American lives." The war's end came days after a terrorist attack near the Kabul airport that killed 13 U.S. service members and about 180 Afghans trying to leave the country. President Biden called the airlift of more than 120,000 Afghans, Americans, and other allies out of the country a, quote, extraordinary success. He also defended his decision to stick to the deadline for withdrawing all U.S. troops to end the longest war in American history, saying, quote, "I wasn't going to extend this forever war, and I was not going to extend a forever exit." Biden said it was inevitable that it would be difficult to leave Afghanistan after 20 years. So the Biden administration has faced harsh criticism for the chaotic evacuation following the Taliban's takeover of the country, and Congress is expected to hold hearings on what went wrong, as they should. After all, that's their job. But allow me a brief editorial note here. I've noticed a disturbing trend over the last couple of weeks with journalists editorializing instead of delivering actual news. In many cases, they seem to be trying to prove that they can be critical of officials on both sides of the political aisle. But the mainstream corporate media has been reluctant to cover the parts of the story that shed positive light on the end of the war, and I'll continue to call them out for it. Thankfully, some new details are now emerging about the evacuations, like this one, surprisingly reported by CNN. The U.S. negotiated a secret deal with the Taliban under which they agreed to escort Americans to the gates of the Kabul airport so they could leave the country. U.S. Special Operations Forces established a secret gate at the airport and call centers to help the Americans navigate the evacuation arrangement. The Americans reportedly were instructed to gather at prearranged points near the airport where the Taliban would verify their credentials and take them to this U.S.-controlled gate. The process helped the Americans get through despite crowds of Afghans trying to get into the airport to escape the Taliban. But it's interesting how stories like that are getting very little play. Just pointing out the obvious. And in the spirit of anything is possible, none other than Ann Coulter took to Twitter on Tuesday to actually praise President Biden, quote, for keeping a promise Trump made but then abandoned when he got into office. Ooh. And then she went further, tweeting, quote, Trump repeatedly demanded that we bring our soldiers home, but only President Biden had the balls to do it. And then she screenshotted, quote, a few of Trump's wuss, BS, I mean, masterful tweets, all of which demanded that we bring our troops home immediately. On Capitol Hill, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy seems to be in a panic. On Tuesday, he actually threatened telecom companies to not comply with the January 6th committee request for phone records, claiming it would violate federal law and saying, quote, a Republican majority will not forget. Is that like saying, nice house you got there? It'd be a shame if something happened to it. The House Select Committee on January 6th requested the phone records of a few members of Congress, in addition to the former guy himself and much of his inner circle at the White House. And then Marjorie Taylor Greene goes on Tucker Carlson's show on Fox Tuesday night to ramp up the threats.
These telecommunications companies, if they go along with this, they will be shut down. And that's a promise.
Oh, I just can't with these people anymore. By the way, those phone records don't include the content of any calls or texts, just the metadata on who called or texted whom and when. All right, so war, pandemic, now on to climate change. Hundreds of thousands of people in Louisiana are dealing with the possibility of weeks without power in the humid summer heat after Hurricane Ida slammed the state's grid on Sunday with 150-mile-per-hour winds. The governor, John Bel Edwards, said, "We have a lot of work ahead of us, and no one is under the illusion that this is going to be a short process." He said that anyone heading home should wait, as power is still out to more than a million people, and the death toll continues to rise. And then, going a little further west, Lake Tahoe is in the fire zone today, while California and much of the West continues to burn. And finally, guess who's visiting President Biden at the White House today? Volodymyr Zelensky. Remember that name? Yep, that's the president of Ukraine, the guy who the former guy tried to coerce into lying about an investigation into Joe Biden and his son that led to the former guy's first impeachment. What Zelensky wanted was a meeting with the president. Well, it's coming today at the White House with President Biden. Elections have consequences. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Check out NicoleSandler.com and please click on that donate button.